Thank you and welcome to all of our new supporters on Patreon. This is an independently produced show, written, researched, produced, edited, distributed, and promoted by us, Carolyn, Kristen, and Michelle, and paid for out of our own pockets because it's important to us. But you can help us pay the bills by clicking the Patreon link on our website, poppreservationists.com, or by going to our link in bio on Instagram and finding the Patreon link in our link tree. It's one of the best ways for you to tell us that you like what you hear, so we can keep on trucking. Thank you and enjoy the show. Your choices are: calmly examine the bomb so I can begin defusing it. Number two, call someone who knows what the hell they're doing. Number three, carry the bomb outside away from innocent bystanders.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, I was going to call someone.
Yeah, both of you nodded your heads on call someone. Mm-hmm. I was going to calmly examine the bomb so
of
I could defuse it.
And I was going to call you.
Yeah. This is why we're together. We are Charlie's Angels.
Hello world, it's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy. We had a dream.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who knew their culottes from their gauchos.
We believe our childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images, and if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving our identities as crime-fighting private investigators with sweet bell bottoms and perky nipples by sweet bell bottoms and perfect hair by asking the question, which one of Charlie's Angels were you?
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Once upon a time, there were three little girls who went to the police academy. And they were each assigned very hazardous duties. But I took them away from all that, and now they work for me. My name is Charlie.
Once upon a time, there were three little girls who religiously followed those three little girls who went to the police academy, and they were each assigned very hazardous duties, like watching TV and absorbing everything it taught them about being a woman. But growing up took them away from all that, and now they have a podcast about it.
Oh, praise be.
I'm so glad
I know.
We have a podcast
it's hard
about
work.
It.
It's hard work.
But somebody has to do it.
I know. Mm-hmm. Well, Charlie's Angels aired on ABC from September 22nd, 1976 to June 24th, 1981. That is a total of 5 seasons and 115 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah. Every time I hear that over 100, I imagine the big cake.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
The syndication
they got
cake.
The cake. They mm-hmm. got the cake, yeah. The series was created by Ivan Goff and Ben Roberts and was produced by television Superman Aaron Spelling. The idea for the series came to be when Goff and Roberts noticed the success of Policewoman and developed the premise of three beautiful female private investigators to be more of an escapist show, which I think it's definitely a little bit more escapist than Policewoman.
Oh, you guys definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's not a procedural and
no.
It wasn't really dealing with any real people. Like those bad guys were comic book bad guys.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Well, this is funny. 3 years earlier, producer Leonard Goldberg had kind of had the same idea, but not really, because his idea was for a show called The Alley Cats, in which three female private eyes would live in alleys and wear whips and chains.
What?
No.
No.
No, it's true.
No,
it's true.
I don't want that.
But since well in the early pre-production stages of Charlie's Angels, both Goldberg and Spelling immediately wanted Kate Jackson. She was like, yeah, no. I mean, hello, 1970s feminism, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was actually given semi-control over the development. Hello, 1970s feminism.
Yes, this mm-hmm. makes so much sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because she emerges as like the lead angel. But
yep.
Nowhere in the show did they say Sabrina is the lead angel.
Well, and you know, fun fact, she was originally cast as Kelly, but was more attracted to the character Sabrina.
Okay.
So she got to have what she wanted, right? It was actually Kate Jackson who decided the three women would be called angels after seeing a picture of three angels hanging in Aaron Spelling's office. Became known as Harry's Angels.
Oh, that sounds like Harry Angels.
Yeah. Don't ask me how it got switched to Charlie's because that is where my research ended.
I can tell you.
Oh, okay. Yay, good.
Okay. Well, I can tell you there was another show on at the same time. I don't remember it. It was called Harry O or something like that. So they didn't want to have the same name. They wanted to get rid of Harry. Now, I wish I had the reason why it's Charlie. I just know that's why they couldn't call it Harry's Angels.
Okay. Well, I can think of a lot of reasons that they don't want
to
be
Harry's Angels. Yeah, that's true.
Harry's Angels. No one wants their angel to be Harry.
No, yeah. And then it couldn't have been sponsored, or maybe it could have been sponsored by Nair.
Right.
Or Tickle Razor. Was it Tickle? No, it wasn't Tickle. It was the deodorant.
Daisy.
It was the little round.
The Flicker.
Oh, Flicker.
That little round one that always cuts you.
That was like ridged.
It had five blades in the whole thing. So you
and
only
you
had
turned
to,
it.
Yeah, you turned it.
That's right.
And
oh,
it was
forgot
like
about
such
the
a bargain.
Turning.
Yeah. You know, you got five for one.
Yeah.
Well, each of these angels were like real people to us. So let's learn a little bit about them. I don't want people to know who our angel identities are right now. So I'm going to randomly assign angels to each of us to introduce.
Okay.
So, Carolyn, I want you to tell us about Kelly Garrett.
I would be happy to tell you about Kelly Garrett. And I've got to tell you what fun research I had with this, because if you go onto the Charlie's Angels wiki fan page, those folks on there, they go down some deep rabbit. They put me
to
shame.
Do.
I mean, my goodness. I'm just going to highlight some of the things that I can tell you about Kelly based on the wiki fan page, but I will put a link in our show notes, and maybe Michelle can put one in our weekly reader just so you can read all of the bits and pieces you can find out about Kelly by watching the series all the way through. I will tell you that Kelly didn't know her real last name because Kelly never knew her parents. Uh-huh. She was an orphan, and she was raised in the St. Agnes Home for the Orphaned in Dallas.
I did not know this.
Well, it's really funny. I just rewatched season one, episode one, and the exposition. So that is so funny, you guys. Like, Kelly will say like, oh, well, yes, like, if only I would have known that if I hadn't been raised in an orphanage without parents.
So Garrett was, I guess, somebody's name. I mean, I don't know if it was the headmaster's name. Hopefully not, because the orphanage matron was named Beamish, and she used to lock Kelly in a dark closet overnight. So I'm hoping her last name isn't Garrett. We also know that Kelly took comfort as a child with a doll named Lilibet. And she still owns Lilibet as an adult.
Oh, I think it's creepy. Like, she's going, oh, and I'm like, oh.
Don't you guys still have things you had as a child? Like, I still have my stuffed panda and my stuffed Grover.
Yeah.
Do you not still have anything?
Sometimes. There's something about a doll, though, that makes me think of people rocking them in the dark going, oh.
And we already know
the baby's
Kristen,
crying.
Kristen and dolls. Kristen wasn't a fan of dolls.
Yes, I have a problem. I have a little thing about dolls that make me feel icky.
Well, after the orphanage burned down.
It burned down. I mean, it's not bad enough that she is from an orphanage and has no parents and has no last name. And Beamish puts her in the closet.
In episode one, she goes back to the orphanage to talk to the head nun, who is like, you turned out so well, Kelly. It's so great to see how well you turned out, because she's like, whatever happened to my best friend in the orphanage? And the head nun is like, I'm sorry to tell you, she's dead.
Well, isn't that interesting? So somehow she ended up in many foster homes. So that kind of tells her story a little bit. After high school, she was trained at the Los Angeles Police Academy. So she decides she's going to be a police officer. And it's important to note that while she is on the force, she testifies at the trial of Frank Desmond, which led to his 4-year imprisonment.
Uh-oh.
This plays a part later on in the series. Remember the name Frank.
Okay.
Frank Desmond. Okay. She kept an unidentified black and white picture of a young girl on her dresser. Throughout the series, whenever you'd see her dresser, you'd see this. But we never find out who that young girl is. I guess we can make our theories.
It's probably the dead orphan friend.
We also know that she fell in love during Charlie's Angels with a gentleman named Bill Cord. But also Chris Monroe also fell in love with Bill
Cord. Oh, no.
So there's some drama that goes on there. What happens? We don't know, because guess what? He dies.
Oh, okay. Well, in episode one, I think her boyfriend is a mustacheless Tom Selleck.
Oh. For real?
Mm-hmm. So, he has no mustache. So it's one of those things you're watching and you go, who is that? Who is that? And when you realize it's Tom Selleck without a mustache, you're like,
I can't even picture it.
That's a very fun fact. And I think Charlie's Angels is one of those classic 70s series where you'll find a lot of stars get to know later on in their careers, getting their little start there. And I'll share a couple of the people that were in an episode I watched a little bit later. But we know that when Kelly went to the police academy, she was very proficient in armed and unarmed combat, because we know that her judo and karate, that's kind of what we see in the opening scenes. She like flips that guy over in like every opening of Charlie's Angels. So we know she's got the judo skills going on.
I forgot about judo.
These are a few other little fun facts we know about Kelly based on her episodes. One, she was good enough at driving a dune buggy that she chased down an experienced driver on the beach. She can drive a dune buggy. It's also implied that Kelly knows how to surf. She knows how to pilot a yacht, though not very well. She cannot drive an 18-wheeler very well. And she can't drive a race car very well, evidently. She was awarded an honorary degree from Blackmore College in recognition of her contribution to solving a murder that had happened on the campus. So maybe even though she didn't go to college, she did earn an honorary degree for solving a murder. We also know that Kelly becomes the head of the Townsend agency after Charlie dies and Sabrina has moved on.
How did I miss that Charlie died?
I don't know. I'm starting to think it was kind of those last seasons when we didn't really – I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak for you, but I think I graduated from it. So I don't remember a whole lot of that season 4 and 5 when some of those no-name people came on to play Angels that weren't the OGs. So that's a little bit about Kelly. Maybe too much. Maybe not enough. I don't know. But that's what I've got.
You freaked me out when you said Beamish, because did you guys see the episode where Kelly is possessed, where she goes to a seance and she gets possessed?
No.
And it's super scary. And Kelly is sitting at the seance table and she starts talking in this little voice like this. And she's talking about Beamish. No, Beamish, no. No, Beamish, don't do that. No, Beamish.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. And so she's talking about Beamish putting her in the closet.
Don't make me go in the dark closet. Please. Please, Beamish, I'll be good. I promise I'll be good.
And I'm like, why Beamish? What is the name? That has to be, nobody made that up. That has to be somebody's name.
Now we know it was the woman who, the matron of the orphanage.
Oh, scary. She's also a very good motorcyclist, or as Pinky Tuscadero would say, a cyclist.
How could we forget that?
Yes, because remember in the opening, she takes the motorcycle helmet off and she whips her beautiful hair around.
That's from episode one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then in the episode where they join the circus, she drives onto the circus property and she's like, hi, I'm Go-Go Garrett. I'm here to be your motorcycle act.
Oh my God. I want to watch that one.
She's Go-Go Garrett.
She's maybe also a little forgetful, because that is such a classic part of the open when she's running away from the car. And then it looks like she realizes she forgot something from the car. And she makes that quick turn and like starts to run back toward the car. I think right before it's going to blow up or something. I'm not sure, but I will always remember like, oh, I forgot my gun.
Okay, Michelle, I would like you to take, hold on. Let me see. Okay, Michelle, I would like you to take Sabrina Duncan.
Let me see what I can. I will. Let me see what I can just pull out of my memory bank about Sabrina Duncan. Well, Sabrina was a founding employee of the Charles Townsend Detective Agency and acted as the team leader and the understood smart one. It's kind of, I think that's kind of terrible, though. They all had to be smart.
I was thinking about
their own ways.
There are no dumb angels.
You can't do that job and be dumb. But it is true, in rewatching some, they definitely gave her the lines where she sounded more like, I guess, technically smart.
Yes.
She had been married to another police officer, Bill Duncan, but was presumably already divorced when first seen. Although in episode one, they insinuate they still canoodle because Bill Duncan comes out and they say, she says something, he says something like, even though we're not married anymore, you still want to come over later? And she's like, I'll be there or something like that.
Sabrina.
Sabrina is also self-sufficient, confident, loyal, trustworthy, and caring, always warning the others of physical danger. Sabrina does things by the book, although I follow a different book. Sabrina worked as an angel for about 3 years before resigning to get married and start a family. And again, these little backstories are coming, you guys, from either charliesangels.fandom.com or hero.fandom.com. So fun.
And she seems the least likely to resign from the agency to go get married. Right? That doesn't seem like something Sabrina would do.
Sabrina's going to be the first one that they're going to dress in a turtleneck and a three-piece suit, like a vest, a turtleneck, and a blazer, and usually in a nice pastel plaid.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Another thing I like in season one is I love her Sabrina necklace. And
I do.
True fan.
I
want a Sabrina one.
I want a Sabrina one. I actually
looked last night to see if I could find a Sabrina one, but that looks exactly like this, kind of curved, and it's in this kind of thick font.
Yeah,
you guys, they even, when she was wearing a pink turtleneck with the pastel vest and the pastel pants and the pastel plaid jacket, they had the necklace outside of the turtleneck. Usually it comes up like a little waterfall. It's big enough that it could go outside of it, but
Over the sweater. I mean, it's just awesome.
Sabrina's just super cool, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sabrina's
cool.
super cool.
She's the mom of the angels. She keeps all the cats in line.
She's a little bit more, I also get that she's a little bit more no-nonsense.
Yep. Absolutely.
A little bit more practical, I think. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's Sabrina.
That's Sabrina in a nutshell. So I'm going to take the third founding member of the Townsend Agency, and that would be Jill Monroe, played by Farrah Fawcett Majors, as she was known at the time. Jill was only in the first season of Charlie's Angels, which always blows everybody's mind.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One season, and she becomes a legend. Gosh. Right?
Yes.
Legendary. Yeah. And even so, even though she was only in one season, I believe it's Jill Monroe who created and cemented the overwhelming success of all of the angels. I just believe that's the case. She was very good at her job, and she even returned for 3 episodes in season 3 and 3 episodes in season 4 because her usefulness as an angel was that enduring. It was really good.
Yeah.
Jill was the athletic angel, and you can see her in the opening credits playing tennis, doing karate and monkey bars. Her undercover jobs utilized her athleticism extensively, and she caught many bad guys while pretending to be things like a roller derby competitor, a swimming coach, and a dance teacher, all things that require you to wear very tiny clothes. But she did not need a car to make a clean getaway because she was just as fast on a skateboard.
Oh, yes.
She didn't need tiny clothes for that, but she did rock a sweet pair of Nike Cortez with a red swoosh. And if you watch, you've all seen this a million times, right? And I love watching that Jill Monroe getaway on the skateboard scene because it's very clear that it's a man in a wig on the skateboard.
So
it's like, it's just like a head of hair and then a body with no hips at all. Like, she's the curviest person on TV and there are no hips anywhere. It's just clearly a man. So after a year with the Townsend Agency, Jill resigned to become a Formula One champion race car driver.
As you do.
And she even won the Grand Prix in 1979.
Wow. She did. Jill.
And as far as we know, Jill is still racing cars in Europe and dating Prince Eric.
Ew.
We don't know. We haven't heard from her.
No, we haven't.
So when Jill resigns from the agency to go be a Formula One race car driver, they have an opening
at
the agency that they need to fill. So they took some resumes and eventually they find the perfect person who just happens to be Jill's little sister, Chris Monroe, played by Cheryl Ladd.
A lot of people loved Chris. And if you're looking at, I don't think I watched season one in real time. I was only 7.
Yeah.
So when I think of Charlie's Angels on TV, I think it's Chris Monroe who I see with Kelly and Sabrina. And I loved her. I just thought she was so beautiful and just so wholesomely beautiful.
Everybody loved Chris.
Everybody loves Chris. Everybody loves all of them.
She's Could you
have an angel you didn't like?
Right.
If so, get out of this country.
Right. Oh, did you know? She did study roller skating with Kenny Daniels. Are we supposed to know who Kenny Daniels is? And she became quite comfortable on the roller skates.
They all roller skate, I think, at some point, yeah.
Oh, Kenny is important because presumably she stopped taking lessons from him after Kenny's arrest. then she stopped, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The roller skating felon.
Huh. Yeah. She's also a really good disco dancer, which came in really handy in the Disco Angels episode because we think of, you know, the disco as being a place of like fun and lightheartedness and dancing. But there are a lot of ne'er-do-wells that hang out at the disco and the Angels took them down. And so Chris was able to use her disco dancing skills out on the dance floor with the bad guys to sort of distract them while they could do their investigating. It was very handy.
Well, I thought you and I, we might dance.
Wonderful idea. Will you excuse me?
Sure.
See you later.
Okay. There are other two forgettable angels that we have that come on. I'm sorry. They kind of
I know. It just is.
I didn't even know who they were.
Well, after Sabrina Duncan decides to get married and have some kids, we need a third angel. So in the beginning of season four, we are introduced to the newest angel, and the producers of Charlie's Angels wanted it to be with a big splash. So we meet her on Love Boat Angels.
Oh!
We meet her on perhaps the most iconic crossover of any crossover ever.
Can we do that as an episode?
We might have to.
Yeah.
Please. Because it's got some, Bert Convy is sinister in it. He's a bad guy. How can that be? So here's where we're introduced to our newest angel, Tiffany Wells. This was played by actor Shelley Hack.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. But yes, I do know Tiffany Wells.
Yes.
Of course.
I'm glad you know her because she only was on for one season because they didn't think that Tiffany was, I guess, you know, she wasn't doing very well as an angel. She wasn't helping as much as she could. And
yeah, she wasn't good at investigating.
Yeah, she was not a good investigator. So she was let go. And our newest angel who was with Charlie's Angels for the last episode was Julie Rogers. And she was played by Tanya Roberts. And maybe not very well because that was the last season of the Townsend Agency.
Too many angels. It's just too many angels. So. I think the reason in the beginning that they grabbed our attention so well is because each one of those angels was very different from the other. And as we get toward the end, it was like they were just looking for pretty people. And that's they didn't differentiate themselves enough from the others.
Right. And sometimes, you know, just stick with the OG. And if ratings start to go down a little bit, then maybe that's the time to say sayonara.
That's right. Time to close the Townsend Agency.
Yes. Exactly.
So who were these people who played our angels? Again, we're going to do this randomly because we don't want to reveal our actual angel identities to you. Although I think a lot of you already know what they are. I would be really curious to see if people could identify our angel identities. Okay, so we're going to start with Carolyn again. And Carolyn, you are going to tell us all about Kate Jackson.
Kate Jackson. I love Kate Jackson. You guys, I was first introduced to Kate Jackson when she played nurse Jill Danko on one of my favorite shows. Do you guys remember The Rookies?
Oh, yes. The name, but I don't remember the show.
Oh, I loved The Rookies. And there are a couple of episodes that are so sad. Like one, she got shot and we didn't know if she was going to live. She was married to one of the rookies, but she was a nurse. But interestingly enough, she got the most fan mail of any of the stars on The Rookies.
Because she's not like the star at all.
No, she was not one of the rookies. She was the rookie's wife. So, but she held her own, got the most fan mail. And that is what prompted Aaron Spelling to say, we've got something here. Let's get her her own show. Let's get her, which Michelle told us all about, how they got her, for this crime action show. Originally, it was written that the characters were going to be police officers. And I think she was one of the people that also said, I think that private investigators would be more exciting. Also, the Alley Cat name, as you all said, Michelle, was so stupid. She probably said that. I'm hoping she said that.
I wonder if in, like, when this was in production in, say, like 1975, if she was getting the credit
for a lot of the decisions she was making because she was a woman and she had, you know, the rest of them were all these kind of established producers and directors.
For sure.
And
the suits.
Because I bet it really changed the trajectory of Charlie's Angels.
It. It wouldn't have been called Charlie's Angels.
Alley cats and whips and chains living in an alley.
And they would have been police officers.
And her instincts were correct.
Right.
Look, it worked. Everything that she wanted to happen, it worked.
Exactly. So, and as you also said, Michelle, she originally was going to be cast as Kelly Garrett, but she decided on the Sabrina Duncan character instead, primarily because she said that's the smart one. She wanted to be seen as the smart one. And she starred in that role for 3 seasons before departing, as her character decided to have a baby and or to get married and have children. But I'm just theorizing here. The decision to leave the show might have had something to do with the fact that Aaron Spelling would not let her go and be the star of Kramer versus Kramer, as we talked about in our Kramer versus Kramer episode.
Well, she was mad, I read.
She should be. And so they weren't willing to rearrange the shooting schedule for the show. And I'm thinking that was the tipping point. And she was thinking, you're hindering my career.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, I think she probably was really upset initially when she's like, Dustin Hoffman's in this movie, because let's not forget, he was big time, right?
Yeah.
But then a year later, you find out it wins the Oscar. That role, I know it was Meryl Streep who won the Oscar, but you would probably feel like, I could have won the Oscar for that role as well.
That was my role. Yeah. That has to be correct, because there's no growth in your career if you are married to Charlie's Angels and there's no wiggle room for you to do anything else. Eventually, Charlie's Angels is going to end, and then what are you going to do?
Do you know that Kate was the only Charlie's Angel to host Saturday Night Live?
Really?
She did that in 1979. It was the 13th episode. Musical guest, Delbert McClinton.
I was going to try and sing the song. I can't think of the song.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, you would know
the
song.
There's one hit, and I can't think of what it is. I'm giving it up for your love, everything.
I'm giving it up for your love right now. So after Charlie's Angels, you might recall that she starred in a groundbreaking film called Making Love in 1982.
I do remember that.
With Harry Hamlin, Michael Ontkean, who had been, coincidentally, one of the rookies. So this is really the first feature film that deals with the topic of homosexuality in a sensitive nature. Mm-hmm. You guys remember that?
I didn't see it, of course, but I do remember the presence of it and knowing what it was about. And then nobody said anything.
Right.
Like, that was it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it was a flop at the box office.
Okay.
But I do remember seeing it, watching it at someone's house late at night or something, because back then that would have been a very thing I'd have been very curious about. So
that would be an interesting thing for us to dig into. Here's something from our popular culture that may not be that well remembered, but might be interesting to revisit because of what they were doing at that moment in time.
I think that's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was super important. I mean, 1982. Yeah. Wow.
That's gutsy.
Right. Gutsy for all of those people that decided to be in the movie, too.
Yeah.
Her career didn't end, though, after the movie or after Charlie's Angels, because she starred in Scarecrow and Mrs. King with Bruce Boxleitner from 1983 to 1986.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was really the last time we would have seen her in a regular series. She had a few little bit parts in the early aughts, as they say, in the 2000s. That was her last time acting, really. She's lived a pretty quiet life since then. But we did see some photos of her last year, 2023. She was a guest at Jacqueline Smith's son's wedding.
Oh.
And so there were some recent photos of her that we could see how she was doing now. But she's not acting. She's living a quiet life somewhere.
With horses. I'm sure it's with horses.
Oh, I'm sure. I think Utah or something.
Yeah, for sure. And lots of dogs.
Yeah,
right.
We're just going to write her narrative for her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of dogs and horses.
What would Sabrina Duncan's best life look like? Okay, Michelle, it's your turn. And I would like you to give us a little bio on Farrah Fawcett.
Farrah Fawcett. What do I know about Farrah Fawcett? Okay, so Jo Monroe was Farrah Fawcett's breakthrough role. Prior to that, she was known mainly just for shampoo commercials and being the wife of, what's his name, you know?
Yeah.
What's his name? Anyway. Mm. And because we are ensconced in 1976 today, right here, we can't not mention the red swimsuit poster and the story behind it. So it was taken right around the filming of the pilot. The photographer was Bruce McBloom. They did the session, the photography session at the major's house. And at the last minute, Farrah swapped out the bikini she was wearing, ran upstairs and grabbed her own one piece, the red one piece, the famous, the red one piece heard around the world. I mean, the girl knew what she looked good in, right? Let's give her that. She was uncomfortable in the bikini and she wanted to wear her own swimsuit. And remember, this was all a full 6 months before Charlie's Angels even aired. We have some funny stories in our 1976 episode, I believe, you guys. Wasn't there one that like dads were giving it to their sons so that because they couldn't have it like in their garage because their wives would be, so they're like, oh, here, son. So then they just go into their bedroom and be like, oh, I'm going to go tuck him in. I'm going to go read my 16-year-old a bedtime story.
I think that red bathing suit needs to be in the Smithsonian.
It is.
I think it is.
Oh, is it? It is. Oh, okay. It is. Yep.
Yay. Okay.
Anyway, Farrah's primary focus was on her marriage. Get this. Her contract with Aaron Spelling stipulated she needed to be finished with each day's shooting at exactly 7 o'clock p.m. to make it home in time to cook dinner for old what's-his-name. Now, this again, this is, I'm not making this up. I'm getting this from other sources. So, you know, let's consider the source, which is Wikipedia. Yep. But it doesn't sound like that was the recipe for a happy marriage. The recipe for a happy marriage. Because even before the end of the first season, she announced she was leaving the show. And according to People magazine, marital trouble and a desire to move to film work were two possible reasons behind her exit. ABC, which had a verbal agreement with her, sued. And Kristen, like you mentioned, that she appeared in other episodes. It's because they eventually let her out of her contract, but it was conditional on making 6 guest appearances during the next 2 seasons.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they sued her, but then, like in a settlement, they said fine. So I find that like I don't know. The whole dinner at 7, I have to be home. And then the marital troubles, I don't know. I mean, how can any of us presume that?
Right. How can we know?
And then sadly, so sad and so tragic, you guys, we all, I'm sure, remember very well that at age 59, she was diagnosed with anal cancer. And just 3 years later, in June of 2009, Farrah Fawcett died at just age 62.
That just seems so tragically young because now, again, how old are we?
Oh, it's so young.
There's a podcast out there that focuses on people who died, whose deaths were overlooked because of who also died on the same day. And so the story is that Farrah Fawcett's death was vastly overlooked because she died on the same day as Michael Jackson.
That's right. That's right.
So we didn't get the opportunity to celebrate her, to mourn her in the way that we would have had Michael Jackson not died that day. She was a legend, and she was a legend for so many different things. So it's an interesting legend to talk about because it was fleeting, and a lot of it was based on her beauty. That's certainly not all who she was, and she did many, many, many things. But she's an icon because of the hair and how she mesmerized people in that poster, which really, the poster is quite chaste. It is not overtly sexual.
No,
she can't control her nipples, right?
She can't control the temperature.
It was really very much a girl next door in a swimsuit that we could not look at. Couldn't look away. Oh, thank you, Farrah Fawcett. Rest in peace. So that leaves the last one to me. The woman who played Kelly Garrett was Jacqueline Smith. Jacqueline Smith is best known for her role as Kelly Garrett in the television series Charlie's Angels and was the only original female lead to remain with the series for its complete run. She grew up in Houston, Texas and attended, did you know this, Carolyn?
I did.
She went to Trinity University, which is where Carolyn went.
Yes, she didn't graduate, but she did go there.
She left after a year. She was only there for a year, and she left to go to New York to join the Balanchine School of American Ballet. But instead of being a dancer, she started getting work as a model and in commercials because you got to pay rent, right? And she got a lot of commercials as a Brett girl. So both she and Farrah Fawcett were kind of the shampoo people. They were the hair people in the commercials. That led to a TV career, like TV series career, that really started in 1968 with guest spots on shows like The Partridge Family and McCloud and The Rookies. She was on The Rookies and even Switch before being cast in Charlie's Angels. After Charlie's Angels, She was nominated for the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a TV Film for the title role in the 1981 made-for-TV movie Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy.
Oh, that's
do
right.
Do you remember this?
No, I do. She did a really good job. My mom could just not get over what a great job she did.
I, even as a child, I remember going, oh my God, it looks, that's like Jackie O. She looked just like her, and their demeanors were so similar. It was a shockingly mirrored performance. It was really, really good. So she went on to star in tons of TV movies and miniseries over the next 20 years, including several TV versions of Danielle Steele novels.
Right.
Like Kaleidoscope in 1990. Yes. And do you remember this one? Family Album.
Of course, I read them all as well. I did too.
Right. I totally read Family Album. I watched Family Album.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Obsessed. Yeah.
I mean, talk about a cottage industry. That is a good gig to get in on, to be the person who plays the lead in all of the Danielle Steele made for TV movies. So smart. And let's not forget, you guys, Jacqueline Smith's contribution to fashion with the Jacqueline Smith collection at Kmart. You know, her name and her face sold those things.
Saved Kmart, too, I think.
Saved Kmart, 100%.
Saved me. I want you all to know, I donned quite a bit of Jacqueline Smith attire in my day.
Did you?
Well, when we lived in a smaller town in Virginia, and Kmart was kind of the only store. Yeah. The Walmart was a little bit further. Mm-hmm. And when I was pregnant, I went from a size like 9 to a size 11 and a half, my feet really got bad. And so I bought like the Jacqueline Smith kind of KED looking sneakers and some other flats that were hers. And then I bought some like extra large shirts of Jacqueline Smith that I could wear. And I think she had a line of stirrup pants and I wore some of those.
Yes.
At the same time.
with the little KEDs.
Yeah, of course. I think I have pictures with that, with those. So, she really saved me during my maternity days when I needed some bigger clothes and I wanted them to be fashionable.
Sure.
From the Jacqueline Smith.
Well, you know, at age 78, she still has a line of clothes. Go on her Instagram.
Wow.
And just like 2 days ago, I was like, that is the cutest, like kind of silky jogger pants with a little like bomber jacket, but she had it all together so it looked like a jumpsuit. And she's in her closet. And I was just transfixed. Also, can we just say, the woman is still just drop dead.
She's still beautiful.
Beautiful, gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
Some have even said that she pioneered the whole concept of celebrities developing their own brands rather than just endorsing some other brand. Like basically Jessica Simpson owes her whole career to Jacqueline Smith.
Yeah, I would totally say that. I mean, that was the first time I remember anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do too. Yeah.
Well, as an actress and a model, I've worn a lot of terrific clothes, and I've learned a lot about what makes clothes fit well and look good. I work with Kmart because they want what I want. Great-looking clothes at a good price. Kmart knows that value isn't just a price tag. Buying something because it costs less isn't much good unless you're happy with it.
Hey, everybody. Let's pause here for station identification. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Hormone Harmony, a name that has so much more meaning to us now at the perfectly ripe ages of 55, 56, and 58. Longtime listeners know that the three of us are no strangers to hot flashes, night sweats, sleeplessness, and the occasional menopause moment, known more scientifically as menopause-related brain fog. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to stressors, including the chaotic hormonal shifts that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Hormone Harmony has over 17,000 reviews online, and what you'll see them say over and over again is that they finally feel like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use PCPS for 15% off today. Thanks so much to Hormone Harmony and thanks to you for listening today. Hey, everybody, a quick message. Today's episode is brought to you by Book of the Month, a monthly book subscription box that helps readers discover new books from up-and-coming authors.
The process of choosing your book is so easy and fun. Besides the website and app being really easy to navigate, the smaller but varied monthly selection, which always includes an anticipated new release, by the way, means I'm not overwhelmed with too many choices, and it's truly easy to make a decision. And let's be real, we're all about simplicity right now, aren't we?
Definitely. So you guys, I was thrilled when I saw that this month's selections included a book I have been anticipating for over a year. I chose The Paradise Problem by Christina Loren. It is rom-com at its finest. Think Pretty Woman meets Succession.
Ooh. I chose Spitting Gold by Carmela Locus, about two shady spirit mediums in 19th century Paris. I mean, come on, you had me at shady spirit mediums, right? This is a brand new hardcover book, and I'm getting it for less than I could get it anywhere else.
And great news, you can get your first book for only $5 using the code PETALS when you order at bookofthemonth.com. That's PETALS.
You guys, we love Book of the Month, and we know you will too.
So all of these angels had a huge impact on us as children, but the critics were not so kind.
No, they weren't. This time, in the 70s, in response to Charlie's Angels, we get a new term about TV shows like Charlie's Angels. So the term jiggle TV, okay, can you figure out maybe what that might mean? I can define it for you as Wikipedia does, the gratuitous use of scantily clad women to appeal to television audiences. Huh. Well, this was actually a term coined by Paul Klein in the 1970s. Now, I want you to remember this because let's take this term with a grain of salt. Paul Klein at the time was the programming head of NBC. Okay, so this is an different network than we would see Charlie's Angels or Wonder Woman. Okay, and he's also known for his least objectionable programming.
Like family friendly to the hilt. Is that what he wanted? Okay.
Exactly. So how convenient for him, in my mind, that he is going to come up with this term jiggle TV when I'm sure Charlie's Angels was killing NBC in the ratings, as was Wonder Woman.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, we see articles in like the New York Times, a piece that has Charlie's Angels as the photo next to a title that's equating these kind of shows with soft porn.
Oh, my God.
What are you saying?
Hyperbole.
Right. And so if you all remember in our 1976 episode that we referred to earlier, Kristen talks a little bit about, you know, is this jiggle TV and this kind of equating it to soft porn and things like that. Is that accurate? Like, is this really what we're looking at? Or is this maybe, again, these movements trying to make this something that it really isn't? Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think of the term? And do you think when you watch Charlie's Angels, is that what immediately comes to mind? And did that for you as a kid?
Certainly not as a kid. Mm-mm. Oh my God, right. No. Absolutely
I mean, watching it this past week, watching episodes 1, 2, and 3, you know, Farrah's nipples are on display, and you can tell they're not wearing bras. Actually, last night I had a pause it, and I was like, "Wait, Sabrina's wearing a bra, actually." But Kelly and Jill were not ever wearing bras, and Jill, no matter really what she's wearing, she's cold.
Yeah,
she's cold.
Very, very cold out there.
But I will also say it's tricky. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think it's necessarily inappropriate because let's not forget it's the 70s, right?
That's right.
This is what they're all kind of doing. Also, I will say that in just the 3 episodes I watched, there is a lot of innuendo in the writing, a lot of sexual innuendo as well. You know, in episode 3, I believe, Sabrina goes to visit a photographer and she tells him, yes, she does want to watch porn. And he comes out in the bathrobe and, you know, he's got like, okay, well, let's get to it. And then thankfully Kelly comes in a halter top to save her. But there's a lot of innuendo, not just that.
Yeah.
So I can see what they're saying, but I don't know that I ever think that it crosses a line. I think I put that 70s Band-Aid over it a lot. I mean, it's certainly not anything worse or even as bad as what is on network TV today.
My God. I mean, to call that porn is ludicrous because their innuendo is one thing. Porn is another.
Right, right.
Porn requires action. These were beautiful women with beautiful bodies, oftentimes wearing small pieces of clothing. At the same time, I never felt as if they were using their bodies in the small clothing in a sexual way. So even in terms of Farrah, whose body was tremendously objectified, her whole being was tremendously objectified, but it never seemed to be for the purposes of sex, right? She always seemed like the girl next door with hard nipples. Right?
Well,
it's not her fault that her body was a work of art. It almost seems like divine that she just came out looking the way that she did.
I do think, though, that the producers, the writers, used her body and their bodies to make everyone else think of sex. There is a line in the episode I watched last night where her car's broken down and she asks the man if he can give her a lift. And she says, "Where do you want me to go?" And the look on his face is like, zoinks, you know? So they're trying to make us think that. But like I've said, it's certainly more tame than today's standards of what we watch. And like Succession or something. My God, you've got, you know, I know that's not network TV, but you have, you know, Kieran Culkin masturbating against a window. I just keep going back to, it's very 70s to me.
It's like, very 70s.
I think that's the point is that, one, we have to remember that's what people were wearing on the streets, too.
That's
it wasn't
right.
like you were putting these people in clothes that they weren't, you know, that wasn't hanging on, you know, racks in the stores, for one thing. I remember thinking, and maybe I'm kind of have rose-colored glasses, but as I was watching some of these episodes now, I thought they were being really smart. Like, they knew they were attractive. Used that as a strength to kind of, you know, almost to show these men as like, that's all they think about. So that's
it is
how
true. Yeah.
They get,
because she was trying to sort of catch him.
They always capitalized on that.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And so here it's like, oh, the woman is the one that's kind of saying the things. And so I always kind of saw them as strong, smart women, almost playing down to these dumb guys.
Totally. That's exactly what I thought, Carolyn.
That's what they're doing in it, because like this man who she wants the ride from, she's trying to catch him, right? She thinks he's the bad guy. Yeah. So basically they're using their sexuality in a very smart way.
Right.
Because they know what it's, they know that the guys are just going to be like, duh, duh.
But always with the upper hand. Never never in a way where they're infantilizing themselves or submitting to them ever.
Exactly.
They always have the upper hand.
Exactly. And I think I picked up on that when I watched that. I mean, that was something I thought was smart for them to do. And I just think also it's the lens through which we look at these shows. Mm-hmm. For one thing, we talk about these nipples showing it. And not many years before, it was burning your bra was how you showed the world that you were a feminist. Like, you can't tell me I have to wear a bra. So that was almost a sign of feminism. That Karen Grassley picture we show when she's like doing her ERA stuff. That so was that not maybe a way to show that as well? The problem, unfortunately, the show had a little bit, was some of the feminists were really mad at it because they thought it was, you know, objectifying women and all of these kind of things. And then we had the groups like the Moral Majority and everything, you know, saying this is provocative and all of that. But again, we pointed out that this was the fashion. I mean, you couldn't walk down the street.
Everybody was doing it. It wasn't just them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And what I always say is, even today, because I will oftentimes, since the pandemic, I will go braless. I'm sorry. There is too much to be contained here. And sometimes I just got to let it go. And Mike will be very uncomfortable. Like, if we're inside the house, he really enjoys it. Outside the house, not so much. He's very uncomfortable. And I just keep telling him, you are just socialized to see my breasts as sexual. And you think that people are looking at me sexually right now. That is socialization. Somebody back in our history decided that they needed to be contained.
Well, you know who
it was. But God didn't intend them to be that way.
No. Well, and Dax would tell you it is like almost a uniquely American thing, because it was the Puritans who came over.
Oh, my God.
In order to set this country up in the colonies and all that kind of thing. So we're based on a Puritan society. If you go over to European countries, I mean, there's nude beaches, all of that. I mean, there's not this stigma attached to nipples and breasts and all of, you know, that kind of thing.
That is so true. It's Puritan thinking.
Yeah.
And also we go back to, you know, these three women being so strong and so capable and so smart. And so why should then we ignore that they're also sexual beings, right?
Right.
Why are we supposed to tamper that down? Why can't they be all of it? And certainly wouldn't you want young girls and young women to see that you can be all of it?
That's right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this author of this article also points out, you know, where are the voices all up in arms when Starsky and Hutch all of a sudden have to play like these undercover hairdressers or something. And their shirts are unbuttoned all the way to their belly buttons, and their hair, you know, their chest hair is all popping out.
It's a double standard.
Yeah, exactly. So why is, you know, why would that be the case?
The litmus test is this. How did those three women make you feel about being a woman? Like when you were a child and watching it, how did it make you feel?
Well, the answer is what I think we're about to get into is how many of us at age 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 wanted to be them. So that's how it made us feel.
Yeah. Right. It was a powerful feeling.
And we didn't want to be them because we wanted to look pretty. We wanted to be them to kick ass.
I was solving crimes on my bike.
There's your answer right there. Right. That's the answer.
This is how I shot a gun. You know, I have my arm up.
Yeah. You guys, Carolyn's got her gun resting on her wrist.
That's how fair a shot.
She's so badass.
And I think I actually had a gun, like not a real, you know, like a cap gun or something. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we played it real. We were going to get the bad guys.
At the root of every little girl who played Charlie's Angels is because they wanted to be badass.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And we're doing this from a historical perspective. Those people talking about Jiggle TV were doing it in the moment. Here we are 45 years later. We're 55-year-old women looking back at how we evolved with that seed planted in 1976. And all of us are sitting here going, it made me feel badass. Mm-hmm. So go to hell, Jiggle TV.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
So like a lot of things from our childhood, this show was more than entertainment for us, clearly, right? It became a branding opportunity for young girls. It went beyond which angel did you like best, and it expanded into which angel did you want to be? Mm-hmm. We were crafting our identities around these fictional characters, and it went way beyond their nipples.
So it did. Yeah.
Right. And did you guys play Charlie's Angels when you were kids? Clearly Carolyn did because she just showed us how to shoot a gun. Yeah.
I mean, I just thought they were so cool seems too small of a word, but that's what it was. It wasn't like I was looking at them going, oh, those are three beautiful women. Right, it was, these are like superheroes without capes.
Like that was our go-to game when we left the house in the morning and come back till later and solved crimes all through my neighborhood with my best friend. Kelly Reese.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So if you played this all summer long, I have to know, like, say you had a story going and, time to go in. Do you remember if you resumed that same, like, did you keep the same story going all summer? Or do you think every time you played, there was a different bad guy, a different situation?
You know what? I think sometimes it was to be continued. And yes, we left, we had a cliffhanger. Yeah. Other times, I think we wrapped it up before, because... depending
like the episode was over.
Yeah, the episode was over. We solved the crime and we were sitting around talking to Charlie, like, job well done, girls.
Oh, that's so fun.
We for sure played Charlie's Angels. I played it in whatever friend group I was in. And a good portion of, we always called them games for some reason. Like, what game are we going to play? We're going to play Charlie's Angels. Mm-hmm. A good portion of the game was the decision, was the assigning of the identities. And there was a lot of negotiation involved. I don't remember a lot of argument because it's really interesting how these three angels shake out is that all three of them seem to be equally popular and everybody had a favorite. There was just an awful lot of planning about who are you going to be? Who are you going to be? Mm. So we are not the only ones who played Charlie's Angels. We were not the only people who molded ourselves after these women. There was tons of Charlie's Angels merch that was for us. I don't think adults were buying any Charlie's Angels merch. So did that come?
As we all sit here in shirts, right now, you guys are all sitting here in our Charlie's Angels t-shirt. But no, Kristen, no, adults weren't buying the merch.
No,
that's stupid.
Yeah, they had all the things. I mean, there were the dolls. There was like an adventure van. There was, I think it was Charlie's Angels Hideaway. Kind of their little like
hideaway.
Yes, they had a hideaway.
Oh, I feel like my sister might have had that.
And it was really cool and modern kind of a thing.
Oh my God. See, let's not forget my sister Carolyn is your age. So like I'm the little sister. So she was as into it as you were. So that's why you might have been saying to Ronnie, your little right. sister, who's my age. Come on, we have to go play Charlie's Angels. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume it was my sister that played it with her friends. And when they wouldn't play it with her, she's asking me to, right? Yep. But I think she had some of those things.
Yeah.
The Hideaway sounds very familiar.
I had forgotten about the Hideaway, actually, until I was doing a little research. And we all know about the lunch boxes. We've got puzzles. We've got board games. I found, when I was doing some research, the Charlie's Angels pocketbook communication center radio. So it looked like a purse, but inside was the radio. And I think it was a real like AM radio that was in there. But it was the pocketbook.
In episode one, Kelly needs to talk to Bosley. So she's up in the room and she takes out, it's like the size of a loaf of bread and it's a black phone. But as if that's not big enough, she then stretches up the antenna that goes about another 3 feet. And that's her secret phone that she needs to call him on. And then last night she's in an office she's not supposed to be in and she needs to take a picture of some files. So do you guys remember in all these types of investigating mm-hmm. shows, she takes out the little tiny, it's like the size of maybe like a lipstick and you push it together and pull it apart to take the picture.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of go click, click.
And didn't you want one of those?
I wanted one.
Yes. Gosh. It was always to take a picture of stolen files.
And you don't look, you don't put your eye in it like a camera. No. You hold it way down low in front of you and you just go push, push. Like you go push, pull, push, pull. You know?
Speaking of files, the episode I watched, Angels in Chains, when they're in, undercover in a prison, but Jill has to look through a file cabinet to find a file. And while she was doing it, it was just like, I was hoosker-doo to these moments where they're, you know, they only have a little bit of time and they're like, because who goes through file cabinets anymore? Right.
Oh, just the files alone. You were hoosker-dooed by files.
Yeah, for files. By manila folders with all the info in there.
They want to capture one of the guys, you know, they want to capture him confessing. Mm-hmm. So they kind of, Sabrina and Kelly kind of look at each other like, are we on the same page here? And Kelly opens up her giant tote bag and kind of glances down and then the camera angle it. And you see her giant tape recorder pushed with record and play and then it zooms in on the cassette thing.
Panasonic.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to get back to the merch, but I want to just say something about that because it makes me realize something that I never thought of before. Another reason that we love these women so much is because they were this little girl gang and they were deeply connected. They could give each other a glance and that look would say, Are you going to record this on the big tape recorder inside your purse?
Exactly.
And they didn't have to say any words. No. And they would maybe give a nod. And so I think the friendship and the connection between these three women was also something that was so attractive
to
us.
So much, yes. Right. Their friendship was strong.
It was women supporting women. And they had this secret language between them.
One wasn't better. It wasn't competition.
Right. No.
They didn't get jealous of each other. Yeah, they supported each other. You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Loved it. I also realized, looking through some of my Tiger Beats, they were in Tiger Beat and Teen Beat. They were considered, I have a Cheryl Ladd poster actually that hung on my wall. Let's face it, Tiger Beat and Teen Beat, I don't think, at least at the time, those were not targeted to boys. And we have, you know, all the people we've talked about, our celebrity crushes, but those were our crushes as well.
Our girl crushes.
Yes, we wanted to be them. And so they were on those pages and on our walls.
I have a Tiger Beat from 1978 right now, or 77, that has the first official Charlie's Angels fan club that you can be a member of. And you were gonna get a decal for your T-shirt. Could have been this one.
I mean, think about it. If this was just about Jiggle TV, the merch that they would have provided for us would have been lipstick. It would have been makeup. It would have been a hairbrush and a mirror, a hair ribbon. It would not have been the Hideaway and the secret purse phone and stuff like that, right? Exactly. This was something that was much bigger than that.
Yeah. They were adventure figures. You know, when you think of, they weren't dolls. They weren't Barbies.
They
were going to have adventures in their adventure van on the way to the Hideaway.
Yes. Okay, do you guys remember where the Charlie's Angels cards came from? They were trading cards, and then – so you collected all the trading cards, and then when you turned them over, you had to collect all of them in order to make a puzzle. Yes.
Hooskerdood. Woo!
Were they with gum? Did they come with gum like the other ones?
I think they might have come with gum. But yes, the puzzle part is what I remember.
Yes. And I didn't, there was like a corner. I didn't have the corner. Right. And there was like this panic to get all of them. If somebody knows where the cards came from, it must have been a pack of gum. God, I was probably chewing a lot of gum if that's the case.
I think it was right there with like wacky packs and, you know, those kind of things.
I think in talking about all of this stuff, even talking about the consumerism of it, it's making it very clear. The answer to all of our questions about was this good for us or was this bad for us? Which brings us back to the title of our episode, which is, which angel are you? That is what we're here to discuss because that was how our culture worked in that moment. We were all choosing an identity to aspire to. Mm-hmm. And we are now going to reveal to you who our angel was, who we thought we were going to grow up to be. So, Carolyn, would you like to go first and tell us who your angel identity was as a child?
I would be happy to, and I want to preface it with the angel identity that I was while I played the game, Charlie's Angels, was not the angel that I aspired to be and wanted to be then.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, because of who your friends were and all those things, maybe a big sister, you kind of got what was left. So I played Charlie's Angels with my best friend, Kelly, lived across the street from me. Kelly was a year older, and by default, her reasoning was her name is Kelly, so she gets to be Kelly Garrett. And there was no arguing with her. I really wanted to be Kelly Garrett, but obviously I couldn't be. My Kelly friend had a really cool yellow 10-speed bike, and bikes played a huge part in our Charlie's Angels portrayal. We were all through the neighborhood. It was like, you know, the robbery happened on, you know, a certain block street. We had to get over there. And for a while we had walkie talkies and those, you know, it was real and we were into it. So she's Kelly with her cool yellow 10 speed. So I've got two people to choose from for whatever reasons. Actually, I think I know. I chose Kate Jackson. I chose to be Sabrina. Looking at the car vehicle, comparison. I had a 3-speed Sears Free Spirit, which to me lent itself more to the Pinto that Sabrina Duncan drove.
I love her Pinto.
The Cobra, which would have been what Jill drove. And then my friend Kelly, if you remember, Kelly Garrett drove a Mustang. So
a yellow Mustang.
Yeah, a yellow Mustang. Mm-hmm. So it all worked out. And so, yeah, so I had the reliable, this 3-speed is going to, with the up handlebars, I didn't have to worry about getting a backache. I sat, my seat was even like a old lady seat. I was reliable. I was going to get you there. I could put you on my handlebars. So, yeah, so I was, by default, Sabrina Duncan, but that's not who I aspired to be, but that's who I was.
And why did you aspire to be Kelly? What was it inside you that was like, I want to be her?
You know, I thought that she was the complete package. I mean, if I'm going to be totally honest, let's say I probably didn't think Kate Jackson was the prettiest, but she was the smartest. Kelly was the complete package. She was beautiful, but she was also smart. She had the feathered hair. Mm-hmm. She had it all. And so I think that was probably my reasoning.
A lot of people say that Kelly was the prettiest, but she was also the most demure. And I wonder if that's something that appealed to people. She was definitely the most feminine, too. Like, even in the clothes that she wore dresses where the other two generally didn't. She just had a different style, a different persona that was a little more feminine.
That might have played unbeknownst to me, like it wasn't a conscious decision. I think those other ones were pretty conscious. Like, I don't want to be just the smart one, like the nerd. That's probably what I thought for Kate Jackson, even though my hair, I'm going to have to find this one photo where I had the Kate Jackson hair. If you guys remember Sabrina's hair, it was kind of Tony Tennille up until like the top, and then it feathered, like, but just the little top feathers.
Part. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but the other feathers. Part all curled under. Mm-hmm. And I've got a photo, whew, with I rocking the Sabrina.
The Sabrina. Sure. Yeah. Michelle, who was your angel identity? Who did you want to be when you grew up?
My sister, like I said, I think was really the only one that I played with. And she had the exact Kate Jackson hair that you're talking about, Carolyn. Mm-hmm. And she loved Kate Jackson. So that was easy. Like, again, you guys know my sister, she dictated who I liked and what I could be when we played things together. And you guys, I think it's not rocket science. It was the long brown hair. I had long brown hair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm 8 years old. I'm going with the one that has the same hair as I do. I think that's how I picked. There you go. The
that's
end.
But very I will logical. Say,
you know what, though? Honestly, I think I love how you just said she was demure. And I also feel like she had such understated grace.
Very much.
Mm-hmm. And poise, right? Mm-hmm. She just was so classy. I think at age 8 and 9, even, I was in awe of oh, Kelly. Wow. And I still am. I'm still in awe of Jacqueline Smith to yeah. this day. I love looking at her little videos on Instagram. But yeah, there you go. Brown hair, brown hair. I'm Kelly.
But I like, but it's interesting too that you identify with the grace and the and class and things like that, because that is, that's something to aspire to also. For me, there was no contest. It wasn't like, who do I like best? It
Charlie.
Was,
she wanted to be Charlie everywhere.
Bosley. I want to be Bosley.
Or Bosley.
Mm-hmm. I almost had no feelings whatsoever about the other angels because mm-hmm. I was so enamored with Sabrina Duncan. I always got to play Sabrina because no one else wanted to
no.
be Sabrina. So I never had to fight for my place in the game. I wasn't even really a regular watcher of the show. I can't even tell you what night it was on. But because I went to bed at 8 o'clock, which was really embarrassing for me that I had such an early bedtime, and it was an 8 o'clock show. And so I really didn't watch it until maybe summertime reruns or something yeah. like that. I really had to play catch up. But it didn't matter that I wasn't a regular watcher of the show because this was in our culture.
Right.
It was what people were talking about. Right. It was in the magazines. It was in Tiger Beat. I saw enough of it to know I wanted to be just like her. When I was in fourth grade, we had an assignment. We had to do a big project on our hero. We had to choose a hero, and it would involve art. It would involve writing. It would involve a letter. And so I immediately was like, oh, my hero is Kate Jackson.
I love
and I
that.
I start doing my writing, and little by little I can tell that by what people are saying and by looking at their papers that other people are choosing people like their moms and
Harriet Tubman.
Yes. Yes. And I was like, "Oh, I've made a terrible mistake." And I felt such shame having chosen somebody from TV. It just appeared that I had done it wrong. I was doing it wrong. And so then I like grabbed some random like relative that was my hero.
Yeah.
And it wasn't true. And there was – because that she was my hero. She was my actual mm-hmm. hero. And so then doing this assignment was such a letdown for me because I didn't get to do Kate Jackson as my hero. So at the time, I'm not sure that I could have told you why I loved Sabrina so much, but as we've mentioned before, I was 30 years old when I was born, and I was like a small adult mm-hmm. when I was a kid, and my family will tell you that I was steady. That's their word for me. I was very steady. I can think of only two times in my childhood and adolescence where I lost my shit, where I acted out emotionally or dramatically. And that was when the first time was when my parents made me go to bed when the part 3 of the Fonzie Loves Pinky episodes was on, and they wouldn't let me see the conclusion. And they sent me to bed. That goddamn 8 o'clock bedtime, you guys. It was really cramping my
yeah.
style.
Yikes.
And then the second time was when my parents were going to chaperone the middle school dance.
And wait, what about when you wanted to go see, what was the movie you wanted to go see with yeah. the Stein twins? And then you ended up having to go see
times.
The Jerk instead.
Three times. Okay. Yeah. I've got three yeah. times when I acted out emotionally and dramatically. That's true. Yeah. I wanted to go see Fame, and my parents said it wasn't appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a nasty gram and taped
right.
it onto their bedroom wall. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was bad. It was something about how they were abusing me or something. It was really bad. Outside of those three events in my childhood, I kind of walked around like a 4 foot tall Sabrina Duncan.
Yeah.
And so I think the identification was real. Like we had a compatibility of operating systems. I was mesmerized by Farrah Fawcett's beauty, as mesmerized as the next person. But Kate Jackson's kind of no-nonsense approach mm-hmm. to femininity was exciting to me. That was how I felt about what I wore and how I presented myself. And so it was like she was validating my taste back at me. That this is, yes, this is a way to be a woman in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can, this is a completely legit way to be a woman. You don't have to have bows in your hair. You don't have to wear dresses. And that just kind of made me feel like I was doing it right. And of course, we always come back to And Sabrina was the smart one, the savvy one, the thinker. Mm-hmm. And that to me was something I did want to be. I admired that and I did aspire to that. Maybe more than Farrah's hair was exciting mm-hmm. to me. I thought it was more exciting to be the savvy one.
So Cunningham brings the diamonds into this country and he's supposed to deliver them to Bialy. But Tracy sets him up to be ripped off by thieves who get the diamonds and they don't even know what they've got.
We're not the only ones who talk about which angel are you. You can go online and you can take a test to find out which angel you are. We're not making this up. So there's an online test at brainfall.com that we all took. And I'm just curious, when you took the angel test, did you get the same identity taking the quiz as you did in your heart? Does it match your identity? Again, this is from brainfall.com, and they say, "Hello, angels. This is Charlie, and I have an assignment for you. Take this quiz to find out which of my angels you are. Then crack an international art theft ring and put a blackmailer on ICE."
I got the identity that I'd always wanted.
You always knew.
The truth. I'm going to send this to my friend Kelly and say I should have been Kelly because, yes. And I want everyone to know, this is what it says. Which original Charlie's angel are you? Then underneath it says, "You are Kelly Garrett!" Exclamation point.
And she printed it out and put it on her wall.
I have it hanging up.
Yes.
This is why I am Kelly Garrett. So this is what, after answering all the questions, and this is a very accurate description of myself. Okay. "You can throw a beat down on an arch criminal while wearing a haute couture dress and never spill a drop of your champagne. You're always ready to get your hands dirty, and yet you still maintain an elegance and a love for the finer things in life." Thank you very much. That would describe me to a T.
And that totally lines up with what Michelle said, too, about the class and grace, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. All of that. It's true.
And don't I possess that in real life, too, right, guys?
Absolutely,
yes.
You
Thank
do.
You. That's yes. how people would describe me.
She's like,
me.
"Please, please tell me yes."
So, yes, it was finally I was my heart was happy because I actually am Kelly Garrett.
I am Kelly Garrett. You should get a shirt that says, "I am Kelly Garrett." Okay. Well, you guys, I was just as overjoyed as Carolyn because when I took the quiz, it said, "You are Sabrina Duncan." I was so excited. And this is what they say Sabrina Duncan is. "The ringleader of the angels, your sharp mind and eye for detail will serve you well in the field and in life. Prepared for any situation, you can do everything from defusing a bomb to wearing the heck out of a pantsuit. Viva Sabrina!"
Yes, and can I just say, Kristen can rock the heck out of a pantsuit. We
I
have,
do.
Visual.
Yes, yeah, she does have a good
pantsuit. That pink one, whew.
I do. Yeah, I love my pink pantsuit. Yeah. I love it.
Well, if we need any proof that this quiz is not sanctioned by Mensa, the results said that I was Jill.
Oh,
the sporty, athletic one.
No.
You guys, of course, my aspiration was to be Kelly. But I thought for sure with the honest choices I made, they'd tell me I was Sabrina because every choice about being naked, and there's a lot of these in this quiz, like at a nude beach or to capture a criminal, I was like, "No, thank you. I'm going to keep my bits covered." You guys, it's hysterical to me that I got Jill. I cannot throw a ball straight, nor do I want to. I literally chose zero of any of the sporty options on this. I mean, we're going to go back now and visit hero.fandom.com. This is my proof that I should not mm-hmm. be Jill. Jill is the sporty and athletic angel and is seen coaching a kid's basketball team, playing tennis, swimming, bowling, skateboarding. You guys, Jill lives on the beach. I don't even like the beach, especially naked. You get sand everywhere. She was a centerfold. Again, I don't want to be naked. Sabrina, though. For Sabrina, they like to tell us that despite being a beautiful woman, she is the one least likely to rely on her feminine charms. When going undercover, her roles are always such that allow her to keep her clothes on. Something that isn't always the case with the other angels. Kelly, though, you guys, I want to be Kelly when we play because Carolyn can do sports and Carolyn can't really dance.
True.
Carolyn mm-hmm. can't dance and she says she tells us all the time she can't dance.
Yes.
But Kelly, according to hero.wiki.com, she goes belly dancing in a hookah bar. Oh.
She appears in a dance performance in a Las Vegas casino. This is the best part, though. This is well worth visiting hero.fandom.com for things like this. Kelly is the only angel to have passed herself off as being from another galaxy.
Oh,
in actuality, her extraterrestrial exploits are limited to jumping a motorcycle from one ramp to another as a carnival performer. I think one of you mentioned
go,
that.
Go Garrett. Yeah.
Jerry-rigging a sabotaged seatbelt to avoid falling from a biplane during aerial acrobatics and safely landing a passenger jet, and all without messing up her gorgeous hair. I was robbed.
You heard that, Charlie?
Everything, Sabrina. And I've already made arrangements for you three to go to prison.
Prison? You've got to be kidding, Charlie.
It's no joke, Angels.
I can say that again.
Okay, so yes, Charlie's Angels gave us impossible beauty standards to live up to. But it was also the first time in television history where we saw women truly kicking ass without having to choose between being pretty and being smart, or being pretty and being tough, or being pretty and being strong. Because those two things are not actually related. Femininity and strength are not mutually exclusive. It's not just the dowdy girls with glasses who can be smart, which is what TV had always told us before. It's not just the butch girls who can run and jump and throw. Charlie's Angels was expanding our view of who we could dream to be. Thank you for listening today, and we will see you next time.
And today's episode was brought to you by Sabrina, Kelly, and Jill, obviously, as well as Scylla, Elaine, Barbara, Helene, Heather, Christina, Linda, Claire, Lance, Kevin, Courtney, Raquel, and Melanie. These are just some of our wonderful patrons and one-time donors that make all of these conversations and all that we do possible. Thank you so much.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast to Jill, Sabrina, Kelly, Chris, and the other ones. Cheers.
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 The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.